Springtime savings are in full bloom, all in the Kroger app. Buy one, get one free on flavorful fresh Tyson chicken during our full line sale. Then mix or match during our 99 cent sale and get Kraft mac and cheese, Campbell's soup, or Bar S Franks for 99 cents each when you buy five or more, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Coming up on episode 206 of Wheel Bearings, we drive the Toyota Avalon Hybrid, the 2021 Cadillac Escalade, the 2022 Mitsubishi Eclipse Cross. Robbie tries out Mercedes-Benz Level 3 Drive Pilot. I try out the new version of Super Cruise on the 2022 GMC Sierra. Argo teams up with Lyft to deploy robo-taxis, and we answer some listener questions. All that coming up next. Did you know you can support Wheel Bearings directly? Head to patreon.com/wheelbearingsmedia and you can become a patron today. Your contributions will help fund the platforms and tools we use to bring the podcast to you. And exclusives and improvements are already on the way thanks to your generosity. So if you want to be part of an automotive podcast like no other, head to patreon.com/wheelbearingsmedia. This is episode 206 of Wheel Bearings. I'm Sam Abuel Samad from Guidehouse Insights.
I am Nicole Wakeland from Auto Vital.
And I am Roberto Baldwin from Engadget.
Mr. Baldwin, why don't you begin with what you were driving this week?
So this week I was driving the Cadillac Escalade, or as the regular people call it, the Escalade. The 2021 four-wheel drive Platinum Cadillac Escalade. It is a very large, very expensive vehicle. The version that they dropped off in front of my home was $112,000. Well, it's $112,000.
Wow.
Yeah. It's a lot of money for an Escalade. And okay, so I'm gonna start off with when the Escalade was first introduced, I absolutely abhorred it, and then I drove it, and then I just wanted to burn it with fire.
Ooh.
Because, like, the first generation and probably the first two generations of Escalade were just horrible to drive. It was like driving a trampoline. Every bump, because they wanted to keep that Escalade, you know, that Cadillac float, that doesn't work very well with a large SUV, because then it just keeps floating for a good quarter of a mile. So every time you're driving on the freeway, and then if you live in, I don't know about the rest of the country, but in Southern California, where I was driving it, almost every overpass, there's a little bit of a lip because we have earthquakes, so everything has to be sort of segmented. And so you're just sort of floating along in this vehicle, and it's unnerving, to say the least. Now, this generation, the 2021 that was driving, is much better. They've the technology, dampening technology, has gotten far better in the, I guess, over a decade since I drove that first generation Cadillac. This is what I like about the vehicle. Super Cruise. I'm a big fan of Super Cruise. At this the version I'm driving has Super Cruise. It works well. It's hands-free. There is a certain corner when after you go over the Bay Bridge when you're going into the East Bay that is actually pretty sharp for a highway. And I had my hands over the wheel because I was like, oh, I don't know if we're going to make this. it did a very good job going around it. And, you know, I don't completely trust any of these systems, 2.5, whatever. It's supposed to be hands-free, so you can put your hands in your lap. If we're going down a straight line, I'm like, okay, I can do that. But when there's corners and stuff, I sort of put my hands up and sort of like, you know, they're levitating over the wheel.
Same. I can't do it. I'm like, okay, no fancy tech's going to work. It's like, but if it doesn't, my hands are like 2 inches from me. I'm like, nope. Okay, it's good. I can't trust.
It's like, I know too much about this technology that I can never trust it entirely.
Right? Yeah,
exactly.
Like, I know it should work, but if it doesn't.
If it doesn't, this is a bad seed. You're like, well, you're supposed to be paying attention. I'm like, yeah, I know. And this is the reason why.
Yeah.
It So I do like Super Cruise. I like the night vision setup, and I know it's kind of set up for the you know, if you're driving through the woods and there's a deer or whatever. But if you live in a like an urban environment or a deeply, you know, densely populated area like the Northern California and the Bay Area, you know, you drive along, you know, a lot of people walk around, you know, there's a lot of walking and public transportation here in Northern California. I mean, there's a lot of people on the street. And I don't know if I'm supposed to say this, but really, if you're from San Francisco or the Bay Area, the official uniform is just black jeans, a black shirt, a black hoodie, and if, you know, probably if you're a Giants fan, a black hat with the orange thing. That's it. That's what you're supposed to wear. Don't tell the tech people, because once they find out, they're going to ape it, and then everyone who's from San Francisco is going to come after me and kill me. So that makes it difficult to see people at night, and the night vision setup on there, where it's, you know, in the dash cluster, it shows you essentially almost like predator heat vision. Everything's black except for things that are hot, which are white. That worked really well, you know, and it saw someone who was riding down the middle of the street on their bicycle. It was able to determine that they were a bicyclist as opposed to, say, a motorcyclist or you know, a very skinny car. I don't know. So I enjoy that technology. It's a comfortable vehicle. It's just that I feel like I like the Lincoln Navigator more. I just think the Lincoln Navigator is the Lincoln's a better job of basically creating a really nice Cadillac than Cadillac has. And it's really tough to look at that vehicle and think it's $112,000. And it just doesn't feel, it feels like an 85, I know that's still a lot of money, but it feels like an $85,000 car, even though it's the Platinum Edition, even though it's four-wheel drive. You know, I've been driving it up and down the freeway. I've been using it for to do errands. I've been taking my wife to and from work with it, and it's not that it's a bad car. It just I just feel like there's something missing. You know, and it has the you know, what is it, a 6.2 liter V8 engine in there. So it's, you know, you have a lot of power. It's 10 speed automatic. I haven't had any problems with the drivetrain or with shifting or with it. Everything is there, but it just feels like, and it comes together, but it doesn't come together in a package that feels that like it should be worth that much money. And I feel like it comes together much better with the Lincoln Navigator. And I know people are always curious about what the MPG is. The combined MPG on this vehicle is 16. It's 14 city, 19 highway. My average was 14.7 miles per gallon. It was fine. It was fine. The 2021 Escalade Platinum. It's fine.
It was awesome.
I want that to be the thing. Like, just show the car driving across the screen in a commercial. The 2021 Escalade. It was fine.
It was fine. And I feel like the technology really wowed me. And I think the technology that Cadillac and GM have put in there is great. But I don't know. Yeah. I'm sure Sam's going to have questions for what's the deal?
No, I mean, I've driven the Escalade, the new Escalade, a couple of times now. I had one back in, I think, January or February, and then I had one in May. Again, you know, once they had launched Super Cruise on there, because I wanted to try out the second generation Super Cruise. And I mostly agree with what you said. I think, you know, and I too, you know, really like the Navigator, you know, as a big full size SUV. That said, you know, I do think that the new current generation GM full size SUVs actually do have slightly better driving dynamics than the Navigator and the Ford Expedition. Mm-hmm. When I had an opportunity to ride in them back to back, you know, over some rough roads, and uneven pavement, the GM trucks, and granted, I didn't actually ride in the Cadillac. This was with the Tahoe and the Suburban when we did this back to back. But I mean, it's got the same underpinnings, and it's got the same suspension setup with the air springs and the MagnaRide dampers. You actually get, you know, less head toss in the GM SUVs than you do in the Ford and the Lincoln. You know, so the ride is actually a little bit smoother, a little better controlled than it is in the Ford vehicles. But aside from that, you know, yeah, I mean, I do think that the Lincoln does feel generally a little more luxurious. You know, not that necessarily either one is worth upwards of $100,000, and you know,
yeah, that's the other
Navigator. Yeah. You know, a Navigator Black Label, you know, is upwards of $100,000 as well. But the Navigator does not, at least not currently, offer anything like Super Cruise, and you know, there's other things. I mean, that OLED display setup in the Cadillac does look phenomenal.
It looks marvelous.
It's
gorgeous to look at.
Yeah,
the technology in that vehicle is just amazing, but it's like that technology in that vehicle. And you're right. The ride is so much better than what it was, and it is better than the Lincoln. But there's something about that Link, that Navigator, for some reason, that feels more like one cohesive, like wonderful unit, where the Cadillac, here's a great thing, and here's a great thing, and then here's some luxury stuff, and it doesn't match up to my experience in other Cadillacs, like the sedans. Like every time I get, I'm like, oh yeah, this is what I'm talking about. This is, you know, you get that, and it's I don't know if it's, I don't know.
I wonder how much of that may be due to the fact that, you know, in the case of the sedans, those vehicles are unique to Cadillac, you know,
yeah,
in their current form, the CT4 and the CT5. Whereas this, you know, does share an architecture with the Chevrolet and GMC SUVs. So I wonder if there's something there. Although, you know, it's the underpinnings, you know, the chassis is actually what's really good on this generation of those. So who knows? I mean, it is a little odd.
Yeah, it just... It's really difficult for me to put my finger on exactly what I feel like is missing in this vehicle. And if you buy an Escalade, and if you're a fan of the Escalade, if you've had one before, you're gonna love this vehicle. Don't be like, oh, Roberto said it's
vastly better than any previous.
It's vastly better than there's just sometimes when you get in a vehicle, you just feel like it's missing something that sort of brings it all together. And for me, that's what I feel like when I'm driving the Escalade.
That certain je ne sais quoi.
The je ne sais quoi. It's missing a je ne sais quoi, which I don't even know what that translates to.
I don't know what. Like, it means I don't know what.
Really?
Yes. Oh. Like, wow. Who's on first thing? It means I don't know what.
I don't know what. That's so funny because it sounds so much fancier. When
right?
I, when
like,
you say,
I'm like, I don't know
quoi.
What. Je ne sais quoi. That sounds much better. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Well, it's like, you know, if people who speak with an English accent sound so much smarter than
exactly.
everybody else, even though clearly, you know, if you look at who they've got as their prime minister, they're not. But, you know,
they did vote
they
for Brexit.
They just sound more sophisticated.
Yeah. Yeah. Good times. Anyway, Escalade.
Escalade. All I can think of is that SNL skit where he talks about getting stuck in his Escalade in the South in the middle of winter. Do you ever seen this? It's like an older SNL skit, and in it he says, so he's all freaked out because it snows in Atlanta, and he doesn't know where to go, and he goes to the only safe space he could think of, which was the highway, in his white Escalade, and he keeps calling it a white Escalade. So every time I see one in my brain, I hear Escalade. Go Google it. It's the funniest. It's hilarious. It's very funny.
White
Escalade.
Mm-hmm. All right, I'm Googling that.
You have to Google. It's a
the
very
annual
funny skit.
Sketch from SNL.
It is, and I see it at some point pop up every time there's snow down in Atlanta. Somebody has it up there or puts a screen capture because it's about how they all have no idea what to do in a quarter of an inch of the white stuff.
The white stuff.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's cute, you know. But I hate the heat, so I feel you. It's, you know, where you live, but
yeah.
Yeah, I mean, you certainly know what to do with the white stuff, Nicole.
I do. We get enough snow up here. A quarter of an inch is like, bah, don't even worry about it. I'm still wearing flip-flops. That's no big deal.
Yeah, exactly. All right, so what were you driving this week?
I was driving something considerably less fancy, and more affordable. In fact, if I did the math right, you could buy three of these or one Escalade. Your call.
Ooh.
Yeah. So I had the 2020 Mitsubishi Eclipse Cross, which is not the Eclipse of old, which was just a car. This is their little crossover. I had a very, very brief time because we had a ragtop ramble up here in New England. So we had a great big car shuffle. We drove up the coast up to Maine and had lobster, and the cars we drove up were not the cars we drove back. So he had a brief time. I know it was really, I had to suffer. I had lobster right on the ocean and blueberry pie because Maine.
Tough.
It was tough. It was one of my harder days at work. I don't know how I made it. So anyway, I drove home in the 2020 Mitsubishi Eclipse Cross. There's a lot of je ne sais quoi with this. So it's a Mitsubishi. It has a 1.5 liter four cylinder. It's a whopping 152 horsepower for this crossover, and it's a CVT. And it really doesn't like to go. It was a little disconcerting, honestly, getting on the highway because I would think I have left plenty of room to merge, and suddenly it's not really. You don't have that oomph. You have to leave a lot of room, or you're going to find that you're inadvertently cutting it a little closer and sort of cutting people off. You're like, oh, I'll be out of your way in plenty of time. Sorry there, buddy. I know you're right up my butt now, but I thought I could get this going.
Give me another half mile. I'll make it.
Give me another half mile, and I swear then I will be out of your way. So I'm not real keen on the performance of it, and it's just – but it's $31,000, so it's a really – that's the top trim of this car. So that's the SEL, and it has power heated seats with leather trims and a panoramic roof. And it's got all the fancy you could want. All the features are there. It just doesn't have the performance. So as much as I want to say, like, hate on it for that, I can't really hate on it for that because not everybody wants a performance car. And if you just need an attractive, fully featured crossover that can handle, you know, your kids, that can handle some stuff in the back, that has, you know, all-wheel drive if you want it for the snow, then you can get one for $31,000. Are you going to love driving this? If you're someone who likes performance, if you like a really aggressive car that handles well, that's spirited, that's engaging, this is not your car. But that really isn't everybody. So for me, it wasn't the best drive because that's not the kind of car I like. But I really do think there's a spot for this. I think for the family on a budget, you can make this work. It's going to make you feel, if you don't mind the driving, if you aren't someone who doesn't care about that performance aspect, which a lot of people really, truly don't, this is just fine. Like, that's good. It's fine.
It's fine. It's fine. Mitsubishi. I take a offense at the fact that they're using the word Eclipse, though.
I know a lot of people do. They're mad because it's not the Eclipse. It's the Eclipse Cross. I mean, do you take offense that it's the Mustang Mach-E?
I take less offense at that because the Mustang Mach-E is actually fun to drive, even though it's not a Mustang. I'm happy to tell you that it's not a Mustang, but it's still fun to drive.
Okay.
I don't feel like the Eclipse is just completely out of left field, like. Don't even bother with the DNA. It's like we have the Eclipse, which is a Falcon, and then we made the Eclipse Across, which is a sloth. I mean, they're not even in the same animal.
Well, granted, the last couple of generations of Eclipse Coupe were nothing to write home about either. I mean, really, it was kind of like the first generation.
Yeah, the one cool one.
And then they got progressively lamer as they went along.
So is this then actually living up to that legacy more than we think because it just continued to get lamer?
It seems to be right on the trend line that the Eclipse was taking, you know, over the course of its, you know, almost, 20-year lifespan?
Is that how long it was around?
Came out in about 1990.
Wow. So the Eclipse...
Yeah, it came out in about 1990.
The Eclipse is the pinnacle. It is the 16-year-old varsity quarterback.
Ooh.
And the Eclipse Cross is 20 years later, and it hasn't been working out.
When he's gotten divorced from the cheerleader, married.
He's divorced.
He's driving an Uber for a little extra cash. Delivering Grubhub meals.
That was how Nicole got her very last Mitsubishi loan ever.
But
he's not a bad person. It's just this is how things have worked out.
Yeah, I like
nothing. It, There's nothing wrong with Bill Eclipse. Bill Eclipse is still a good person. It's just that Bill Eclipse is not 16-year-old Bill Eclipse, like varsity star football player. He's, you know, recently divorced Bill Eclipse.
Yeah, in mid-30s. I don't think it helped them at all. I mean, I suppose what they were probably trying to capture was the idea that, hey, we'll capture some of the spark of the quarterback Eclipse. But instead, it's like this huge, it would be better if they go with something totally different. So you had no preconceived, like, yeah, Mitsubishi Eclipse. Like, so that you had no preconceived notions. Then you go into this, I mean, it wouldn't actually make the car better, but maybe it would make it less, like, kind of disappointing. Yeah. Like, you wouldn't have thought, well, maybe this is like an eclipse in disguise. Nope. Nope, it is not. Don't think that.
You want to under-promise and over-deliver, right. Not the other way around.
Right, exactly. Yeah. So maybe if they had changed that up a little bit, you know, maybe there was a better way to do that. But it is not a great car to drive if you like driving, if you like an engaging drive, if you're someone who's really into that sort of sportier handling, crisper handling, that performance. But there are plenty of people out there driving cars that look at them as nothing more than toasters. You know, they're an appliance. Yeah. They get the job done. This does get the job done. It has all-wheel drive. It's very affordable. And if you want to have, it still has nice features. I mean, leather seats are leather seats are leather seats. It doesn't matter if the car doesn't drive well. So if you're still looking for something that's an affordable family choice and that the drive characteristics, the performance is just not a priority for you, then you're going to be perfectly happy with this and you're going to save a ton of money because you're not getting a performance car. How's that?
Right. And, you know, to affordability, you know, if you don't live somewhere where you need all-wheel drive,
yeah,
you can – I assume you had the all-wheel drive one, right?
I did, yep.
Yeah. So, I mean, you can get it for about $25,000.
Yeah, if you
front wheel drive, that's actually probably gonna perform a little better because it's gonna be a little lighter.
Right. Even if you go with the chop trim with that SEL, no, what is it? The SEL without all wheel drive. Where is it? Yeah. It is 29. So it's still under
27,000.
Yeah. So it's still under $30,000. You know, it's still coming in relatively cheap in the grand. I mean, that's pretty cheap when you consider what you're getting. It is a nice,
but by modern standards, yeah.
Exactly.
All-wheel drive starts at, with like destination and all that jazz, at $27,000. $27,000, you get all-wheel drive and a 1.5, you know,
right?
CVT. But still, all-wheel drive, you're in the mountains, you need a car, or you just need to get to the grocery store and get to work. Don't care about anything else.
I feel it's like, you know, like you look for cars.
Or you
like
could get a Ford Maverick for $20,000.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, I looked at that. I got to see that up close and personal this week. That was awesome. That looks cooler than this drove. So we'll see. I have better hope for that. I think I'll
looks
be more
cooler.
More excited about that. But yeah, is it a car you want to drive if you really enjoy the driving thing, if driving style is your priority? Absolutely not. If you're looking for an affordable crossover that can still be attractive and comfortable inside and, you know, does the job of doing what you want a crossover to do, bingo. This fits the bill.
Bam.
And the reality is that is probably most people.
See, yeah. That's what I mean. Like, as much as we're all into it, like, yes, how does it drive? How's the acceleration? How's the handling? How's that transmission? Most people aren't as into that as we are. And I think there's plenty of folks who be honestly quite happy with this because they're not looking for that engaging driving experience.
They want safe, reliable, affordable.
Correct. And this checks all those boxes.
Bam.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
I'm going to keep saying bam throughout the podcast. Enough. Sorry, everyone. Apologizing in advance.
All right. I also had something that was quite fine. Maybe not quite ultra fine.
Is that the theme of this podcast?
I think
podcast?
A little more fine, more fine than the Eclipse Cross. I had the Toyota Avalon Hybrid Limited. Mm. So the Avalon, for those who don't recall, is Toyota's big sedan. It's based on the Camry platform, but it's bigger as it always has been, and it's one of the last of the big traditional sedans that you can still buy, aside from like the Chrysler 300 and the Dodge Challenger, Dodge Charger. This, you know, if you You know, previously we were in the market for something like a Ford Taurus, Chevy Impala. You know, this is one of the last of that breed. All those cars, they're gone. The Buick, LeSabre, LaCrosse, whatever. You know, they're all history. You can't buy those anymore. But you can still buy the Avalon. And, you know, if you're not somebody that wants that taller riding position of a crossover, you know, you like the car style seating position, and you want big room to stretch out. You know, if you're a tall person and you need that extra headroom, extra leg room, and you've got tall kids that are going to sit in the back, lots of room in the back for them, good sized trunk in this thing. And this is the hybrid. It's got Toyota's 2.5 liter four-cylinder hybrid powertrain. So it's the same setup that you will find in the Sienna, and the RAV4, and the Highlander. Although unlike the Sienna and the RAV, and I think also the Highlander, this is a front-wheel drive only. I don't think there's an all-wheel drive hybrid Avalon. But it's also in the Camry. So basically, you know, if you like Camry, but you just want more of that, the Avalon is the car for you.
You want a little more Camry.
It's yes. I mean, it's, you know, and this current generation Avalon, I think, is actually a decent looking car. I think it's you know, maybe a little too much grill, but that, you know, is not
just a
problem
skosh.
That is unique to
skosh,
not unique to Toyota. This is you know, it's a pandemic that's going around among auto designers. They feel like they need more grill. But you know, aside from that, you know, I think it's a nice shape. It generally looks good. Excuse me. The interior is really nice. It's very comfortable. The materials are well done. Good fit and finish. You know, it's typical Toyota fit and finish. There's nothing really to complain about. It's not particularly quick, but I think it's probably quicker than the Eclipse Cross. The one I had, it's definitely, it's a nice place to spend time. It's got, as with all contemporary Toyotas, it's got the full Toyota Safety Sense P package. So it's got the pre-collision system with pedestrian detection, full speed, adaptive cruise control, lane departure alert, with steering assist, so lane keeping assist, auto high beams, blind spot monitors, all the goodies. Lots and lots of airbags, you know, twice as many airbags as you have seats. So everybody's got at least two, to work with. You know, I think it's a really good full size sedan, and it's EPA rated at 43 miles per gallon city, highway, and combined. I think I got about 38 because I was not being particularly efficient in my driving with it, because I wanted to see, you know, what it could do, so I was playing with it a bit. It's actually a pretty decent handling car now. It's, you know, on this modern Toyota platform that has decent driving dynamics, so it feels safe and precise. You know, it goes where you point it. You know, I think it will merge with traffic a little more promptly than the Mitsubishi will. And it starts off, the base XLE hybrid starts at $37,000. The limit, there's also a mid-level XSE, which is the slightly more sporty looking one, so you get the more black trim, and the dark gray painted alloy wheels, and then the limited is the luxury version. So all in for this one, including delivery charge, came to $46,717, which, not inexpensive, quite a bit more than the Eclipse Cross, quite a bit less than the Escalade. But you know, it doesn't carry eight people like an Escalade can. And
if you have two of them, you could buy two.
But
and maybe strap them together with
that's
some
true. You could buy two
something.
and actually have more, even more people. You could have 10 people.
Yeah.
If you have two Avalons. So there
take
is that.
Take that into account.
But no
Cadillac.
Super Cruise though.
Oh yeah, that's true.
Yeah. So, you know, if what you want is a big sedan, this is the last one you can get pretty much in the US market. And it's a good one. I mean, you won't be disappointed if this is the kind of car that you want.
Yeah, I was trying to think of like a big sedan that's left. And I'm like, no, no. Honda Accord, no. Mm-mm. Maxima, no.
I think
MKZ's gone.
Kia K7, is that still available?
I think
Kia discontinued the K7
as well.
I don't
think there's just the K5 now, isn't there?
I think so.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's just the K5.
The K7's gone. You know, so I guess the only other big sedans you're going to find are, you know, the luxury sedans, you know, the Mercedes, BMW, Audis. That's it. Everything else is gone.
There's nothing left.
The Nissan Maxima, you know, is smaller than this. Yeah. You know, the Maxima is actually the same size as an Altima, just with arguably sportier styling. But you know, it's not any bigger. So this is it. You know, Honda doesn't have anything in this class.
No.
So those are your choices. So if you want a mainstream big sedan,
that's it.
Toyota's
got
you covered. And given that they have a monopoly on the segment, you know, it's good that they haven't, you know, dropped the ball and, you know, kind of let it go to seed. You know, it's still a very good vehicle. So, all right. News of the week.
Dun, dun, dun.
Last time we talked about
driving the Mercedes. Before we get to news, can I mention something? There was something I wanted to mention from last week from our reviews that I totally forgot about. So last week I had that mini convertible, mm-hmm. and we were talking about the roof, and you guys were debating whether it was a silk screen little Union Jack situation happening, or it was woven in. I got an answer. It's actually woven directly into the fabric, and there is a maximum number of colors. Do you know what the maximum number of colors they can do on the top of any convertible is?
8.
No, not even close. 3.
3. Okay.
It's because it uses like those old, like, you know, the old fashioned machines you'd see, like, if you went to tour, like like this is what it was in a Colonial Williamsburg or whatever.
A loom?
Yeah, it's like a loom situation where it actually pulls up the different threads. So it pulls like all 3 of the threads are always there, and it just pulls up the one that it wants. So it can do 3 different threads. So it's that's what I learned. So there's 3.
Do they use a Toyota loom?
They do not use a Toyota loom, I don't think. I don't know. I'm sure it's some proprietary thing because they make like every convertible top. I asked them, I'm like, who are your major competitors? He's like, it's us. If you've got a convertible soft top, it was made by Hartz. I'm like, oh, okay.
Well, there you go.
Yeah, but so that's what they said. So it's not, they do silkscreen stuff that's like on their vinyl kind of tops that you can like custom order. You could get one that said like Wheel Bearings Podcast if you wanted to. But otherwise, right? So
merch.
Now there's your incentive to get a convertible and do that to it. But yeah, so they actually are all woven tops and they use different fabric, different threads, and they pull them up so that you can get exactly the pattern you want. They have this funky stuff. They did one for Gucci. They did one once for Fiat that like says Fiat on it as a special edition. It was fancy stuff. So
cool.
I just wanted to mention that because it came up last week and I got that question answered.
I like that it's weaved in.
Excellent.
Silk screen looks cool, but it's going to fade.
But if
it's weaved in, like it's all going to fade at the same rate because it's all what do you call it, dyed as opposed to as opposed to like painted or whatever. So
you're not going to have like your top is really sort of still bright and brilliant, and suddenly the woven bits are starting to look like really faded and crummy.
Yeah.
So there you go.
Excellent.
Yeah. Okay. Now you can go on to the news.
So. Okay. last time we talked about Roberto driving the Mercedes-Benz EQS in the mountains of Switzerland, and that wasn't the only place where you got to drive it, or it wasn't the only thing you evaluated when you were over in Europe, was it?
That is true. Mercedes took me to the Immendingen. You know, every time I had to do it on video, I had to go up to a Mercedes person. He's like,
How many takes did it take in that video?
All I had to do is have them say it to me, and then I do the take. And then, but if like as soon as I had to like say something else, and then go back and talk about the Immendingen test facility, I would have to walk over to someone. How do I say it again? And they were just like, oh my God, this guy's an idiot. I can't believe we let him in our test facility or even in our vehicle. I was at the Immendingen test facility. I'm probably saying that wrong. In Germany.
I have to watch your video now to hear how it's supposed to actually sound.
Yeah, that might be it. I don't know. Go watch the video. And they let me, I guess the word is drive, but sit behind the wheel of Drive Pilot, which is their level 3 autonomous system. It's coming to Germany on the S-Class initially, and then eventually EQS before the end of this year. And then the system will be coming to the United States. They really want to bring it over here. It's, you know, United States is a large market, et cetera, et cetera. When you're bringing something to Germany, you have one country you have to worry about, and it's one law and one rule and one set of regulations. When you bring something to the United States, it's 50 laws and 50 rules and 50 regulations. So I feel like it's going to be tough for them. But at the same time, yeah, go for it. Why not? So I tried it out, and it was impressive. We were on a track, and Mercedes explained to me that the reason we had to do it on a track is because, well, we can't create traffic on the highway or the expressway. You know, we can't recreate these scenarios on the road without putting people in danger, or, you know, we couldn't, like, what if we go out and there's no traffic and you're just driving around? That's not very helpful. So they recreated traffic. They recreated cars parked not quite off the road. They recreated an emergency vehicle. They had a police vehicle, like, pull up behind us. I don't know where they got that. And all in all, the system worked really well.
They provide all those vehicles, all the police vehicles.
Yeah, so, every, yeah. You know, when you go to Germany, problem. Like, you get in the taxi, it's a Mercedes-Benz, which here would seem very fancy, and there it's just a car. You're like, eh, getting my gross taxi. It's still a gross taxi. It just happens to have the star on the front. It worked, yeah. It has sort of the same sort of situation as Super Cruise, where you're seeing, you have information that pops up on the, like a lighted information that pops up on the steering wheel. It tells you when you're in Drive Pilot and when you're not. You have to first turn on the Advanced Driver's Assistance System, the ADAS, and then at some point, a little A will pop up on the dash cluster, and there's two buttons on either side of the on the steering wheel, and when those light up, you push one of the A's, and then it takes over. And Mercedes-Benz was very forward, like, the car is now, everything that happens is the car's fault now. It's not your fault, it's not your responsibility.
So they are taking legal liability.
Well, okay. In Germany at least, so we'll see how that works in the United States. Yeah. We're far more litigious than, you know, and Volvo's, you know, very much said that they will take responsibility. But yeah, the car is the car's responsibility. So I, first off, that is, even on a test track, because we're still like following a bunch of cars, it's weird to be behind the wheel of a car and not do anything. And not watch where you're going, and not it's really hard not to, like, want to drive. Even when I've used autopilot and Super Cruise, as I mentioned earlier, you kind of want to put your hand on the wheel because you kind of don't trust the robots. And I was like, well, it's their car. Let's see what happens. but yeah, it worked really well in their, you know, in their little system that they set up. I think I've been on a lot of these sort of autonomous test vehicle drives, and almost every one of them, something, even if it's small, something happens. There's always a little hiccup. There's always a little something here. There's always a little something there. And I didn't have any issues. There were no issues that popped up at all when I was in the Mercedes. The system is, it, there are some rules. It won't work in the rain at all. If it's raining, no, the you can't turn it on.
Why is that?
I think because I think the concern might be that the rain might adjust the system, the sensors just enough, or there's no backup, you know, the redundancy. Like, well, if not all the sensors are working at the same time, then we don't want to do it. And I think that probably comes down to the responsibility aspect of it, where they're like, well, if we're going to be responsible, we want to make sure it's working in ideal conditions. So they're very forward. They were very like, it doesn't work in the rain. And when we got there, it was kind of sprinkling. So they were trying to rush us through really quickly because there was a bunch of us, because they wanted to get us in the vehicle before it rained. And as I was doing my final stand up of the vehicle after my drive, it started sprinkling. And so, you know, so I don't know if some of the other journalists were able to take a ride with it. But as soon as I got there, I was like, I got to get this thing because I got to shoot a video. It's only up to 60 kilometers per hour, which is about 37 miles per hour, which It's also sort of geofence, like Super Cruise. You know, it's supposed to be on the freeway or a highway. You can't go. You can't be going very fast. So it's essentially a traffic, the level three traffic system. So
traffic jam pilot. It's like a traffic. These things are being referred to as.
Yeah, which, you know, if you commute every day, you're gonna unless you know, even in an EV, you know, the carpool lanes, because there's more and more EVs here in the Bay Area, the carpool lanes are starting to get they're starting to get backed up, and so you're gonna be stuck in traffic. That's usually when you're on your way to work. You probably have emails. You probably have texts. You probably have to do some research for that meeting before you get to work. You might have some phone calls. You can do all that without really paying attention. There is another rule. You can't have something that covers the in-vehicle monitoring system. So within the dash cluster, there's a camera that watches your face that makes sure you can't be reading a newspaper. Because it needs to make sure that you're still there. Even though you're not responsible and you don't have to be paying attention, it still needs to see you. So that's interesting. And I think that also, I'm sure they've seen a lot of those YouTube videos, whether they're real or fake or whatever, of people riding around in Teslas with autopilot in the back seat, or, you know, sitting in the passenger seat, or just whatever insane shenanigans that put themselves and others on the road at risk. I think they've probably seen those. They're like, yeah, that's not going to happen. We're not, you know. I was impressed, which is, you know, with these systems, it's tough to be impressed with them because we've all talked about where the fallacies are. You know where how things are going to fall apart or could potentially fall apart while you're in these systems. Of course, I was on a test track. And so I really want to be able to test it on an actual road. So maybe before the end of the year, I'll get to go to Germany and try it on an actual vehicle, on an actual road, doing actual things, and see how it works and see if I'm still as enthusiastic about it. It's still tough not to pay attention when you're driving. One thing that was weird is that they have a LiDAR sensor that's in the front, and it's on the driver's side of the star, and on the left of the star, on the passenger side of the star, it looks like there's another LiDAR sensor. That's a dummy sensor. It's just there for symmetry. So you have
awesome.
You have one that's working, and you have one that just looks, it's just there. It's just symmetry. It is very weird. I don't understand I think there was, we've designed the cars this way. We need the LiDAR. We can't put it in the middle because that, you know, branding, I don't know. Just put something that looks fake over there.
We can't put the star off center. That has to be front and center.
That has to be absolutely centered and not messed with in any way whatsoever.
Yeah.
And so, you know, if from I watched the video and looked at the pictures, and you know, it looks like that sensor is they haven't said who the supplier is, but it looks like it's a Valeo Scala LiDAR, which has a fairly narrow vertical field of view. So it kind of has to be where it is in the grill there. They can't put it up on top of the windshield like Volvo's doing with their Luminar LiDAR next year. They can't really put it down lower. So it kind of has to be at that height. So they're kind of stuck, you know, as long as they're using that particular sensor. That's also when Audi introduced the current generation A8 a few years ago, they also announced a traffic jam pilot system using that same LiDAR sensor, and they had it in roughly the same position in the grill. But because the laws hadn't been finalized yet at that point, they never actually implemented that system. They never released the software for that system. The constraints you talked about, Robbie, around the speed and geofencing and the driver monitor system, that's all because of the regulation that was finally passed last year. There's an organization called UNECE that does harmonized vehicle regulations for all of Europe, and about three dozen other countries, about 60 countries around the world. They all follow the same They all use the same set of vehicle regulations, and they passed a regulation for these so-called level three systems. And you know, that specifically says you can't go above 60 kilometers per hour, 37 miles an hour, has to be limited to highways, has to have a driver monitor system. There's also some tests in there, you know, unlike here, you know, where, electric car companies can just put stuff out on the road, you know, and let their customers test it. You know, over there, it actually has to be evaluated first and be approved before the manufacturer can sell it. And there has to be a data logging system that is accessible to investigators and to service personnel. So you don't have to rely on the manufacturer to tell you if the system was active at the time of a crash. So it's, you know, I think we're going to see a bunch more manufacturers launch these kinds of systems over the next couple of years in Europe and elsewhere. BMW was going to have a system like this on the iX. When they were here in Detroit a couple of weeks ago, I talked to them and they don't know yet when they're going to launch that one. It's probably not going to be until late next year at the earliest. And with the Volvo XC90 replacement, that's also going to have a system that's capable of this, but they haven't decided yet when they're going to enable the level three capability.
Yeah, it's, and you know, I would rather add error on the side of caution with all these systems than, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. I don't like the idea of beta testing.
Yeah.
I don't, removing sensors.
Well, especially when you get to these systems where, you know, now you're allowing the driver to not watch the road 100% of the time. You know, with Super Cruise, you have to keep your eyes on the road all the time. The driver monitor system's looking for where you're looking. But with this system, you can be looking at the screen. You can be looking down at your phone and texting, as long as your phone's not up in front of your face, you know, blocking the monitor. You can be doing all this other stuff, but you do have to remain alert and ready to take over. And the system, they give you up to 10 seconds, I think, to take over. Mm-hmm. So that's kind of problematic, because if you're not paying attention to the road, even though you're awake, if you're not watching what's going on, you know, when the system says, whoa, I need your help, you know, it takes some time for you to look around and figure out what the situation is and figure out what you need.
You're coming
to
in cold. And, you're not coming in like prepared like you would with Super Cruise or with like the BMW traffic jam assist that they have, where it's hands-free also, but it's, you know, it's regulated to a certain speed. You know what's going on. You know why the system's disengaging and telling you to take over. With level three, you're just like, oh, I guess this might be what's happening.
Yeah. Okay, so speaking of Super Cruise, I got to try out the latest update to Super Cruise last week at the GM Proving Grounds. It's coming sometime early in 2022. They're going to have a refreshed versions of the GMC Sierra and Chevy Silverado pickups, and this updated version is going to be on there. So this is the next step beyond what you drove in the Escalade, and it's using the same hardware, and actually the updates that are going into the pickups will be provided to Escalade owners via an over-the-air update. As soon as it's released for the pickups, Escalade owners will get it as well. So this will be the first time that GM has done this kind of update, this kind of functional safety update for one of their vehicles over the air without having to go into a dealer. So the changes now, there's a few changes, a few improvements that the system has. One, you now have the ability to use Super Cruise and go hands-free while towing a trailer, which you may or may not think is a good idea.
Did they have you try that? Like, did you see that?
Yeah, we were towing a 5,000-pound trailer.
Well,
and
you're
great.
Still here, so okay.
I mean, you know, it was only on the test track. We didn't get to try it on public roads yet. But if you've ever towed a trailer, you know, it can be a challenging situation, especially if you get into crosswinds and things like that. I mean, all modern trucks and utilities have trailer sway control, so they can try and detect that, and they'll apply the brakes individually to try and get that settled back down again. But I actually think that this may actually be the best application for something like Super Cruise, is when you're towing a trailer, because you actually have more cognitive load when you're pulling a trailer, because you've got to pay attention to what the trailer is doing, and you know when you're changing lanes and things like that. And if you can reduce some of that workload a little bit by allowing the driver to go hands-free but still paying attention, I think that actually can be useful. And you know, as you know, when you put a trailer on the back of a vehicle, your stopping distances are going to be a lot longer. Your acceleration is going to be slower. So one of the things that they've incorporated in here is they put in some algorithms that look at when you're braking. You know, when you apply the brakes, even before you use Super Cruise, it looks at how hard you're hitting the pedal and what actual deceleration you're getting. And similarly, when you're accelerating, you know how hard you press the gas and how fast the vehicle's accelerating, and then from that, it's working back and estimating how much of a load you're towing. So, you know, if you're towing a 2,000-pound trailer, you know you're not going to have as much impact on your acceleration. If you're towing 5,000 or 10,000 pounds, you're going to have more impact. So they estimate what the trailer weight is from all of that. And then they're compensating in the way they control Super Cruise. So, you know, it will, when you're using Super Cruise, it will, for example, it'll start braking sooner if it sees the vehicle ahead of you slowing down and it needs to adjust its speed. Or, you know, it will adjust the way it accelerates, things like that. So it does a lot of really clever things in there to compensate for the fact that you've got a trailer on there. Now, when you're towing a trailer, you don't get some of the other new features that Super Cruise is also getting, which is the automatic lane change capability. So if you're not towing a trailer, you now the Sierra and Silverado and the Escalade and several other vehicles will also have the ability to automatically change lanes. On the Escalade that you drove, Robbie, you can do lane change on demand if you tap the turn signal stock. The sensors will look to see if the adjacent lane is clear, and if it is, then it'll actually execute the lane change for you. But you have to initiate it. You have to tell it, I want to change lanes, and then it'll do it. With this updated version, you also have automatic overtaking. So if your speed is set at 70 miles an hour and the car in front of you slows down to 65 or 60, the system will look to see if the adjacent lanes are clear, and it will automatically do the lane change. It'll give you a beep to let you know it's going to do a lane change. And if you don't want it to change lanes, you can just tap the turn signal stock to cancel it. But if you don't do anything, it will automatically do the lane change, speed up, pass the vehicle in front of you, and then move back into the lane. And it always prioritizes going to the left, not the right lane, but to the left lane, and then moving back into the right lane after it completes the pass and gets clear of the vehicle ahead of you. So it's programmed with proper lane etiquette. It will pass on the right if there's no room on the left, but it always prioritizes the left. Not crazy about that.
Sad that, like, I mean, Tesla's system will you know, when I used it when he still had to do the stock. But it would say, hey, you need to get back mm-hmm. over to the right lane. And it's sad that we have the cars telling us proper lane etiquette mm-hmm. because people are just hanging out in the left lane like it's no big deal. Yeah.
So Super Cruise will go back into the original lane by itself without any prompting. What else? Oh, because it can now do the automatic lane changes, it also takes care of another problem that Super Cruise has had since it launched, which is if you're driving down a highway and the lane that you're in is coming to an end, you had to manually move over into the other lane. Now it knows from the maps, from the high definition maps that it uses, that, oh, the lane I'm in is going to end in a mile. I'm going to move over to the other lane. And it does that automatically for you, so you don't have to worry about that. So these are all changes that are going to be coming to the Escalade, the Cadillac CT4, the CT5 that have Super Cruise now. It's also being added to the Cadillac XT6, and then also the Silverado. So all that's coming early next year. The trucks that we drove, because they're still prototypes and they're not GMC is not ready to fully reveal all the updates to the 2022 trucks. The interior was all covered up with camo, as was the front and the rear of the truck. But one of the questions that we had today was from AJ. He asked about whether the 22 Sierra gets the updated infotainment screen. So as I said, we didn't actually get to see the infotainment screen, but you know, the camo that was on there wasn't quite securely fastened down, so I could actually see a little sliver of it there. Mm-hmm. And I'm pretty sure that, you know, because of the fact that they weren't letting us see the interior, I do believe that the Sierra and Silverado are getting the new Android Automotive powered infotainment system when they launch early next year. It's going to be launching first on the Hummer EV, and then coming to the Silverado and Sierra early in the year. So I'm pretty sure it is getting that new system when it launches. And those are both going to be, you know, late 22 model year launches. And so sometime probably in the first quarter is when they're going to go on sale.
Cool.
Interesting.
Let's see.
1 second. I got to go check. Yeah. The dog is eating something. I'll be right back.
Okay. All right.
You know, I was wondering why all the pictures from the event were all this, like, totally covered up truck. Like, you can, like, how come we don't have a decent picture?
Yeah, well, they wouldn't let us do any.
You just answer the question.
They wouldn't let us do any photography.
Well, it wasn't even, like, a picture.
They only provided one photo.
Yeah, everyone. I'm like, why does everyone have this one crappy photo now? Now I know.
Yeah. Yeah, we were at Milford, and they wouldn't let us do any of our own photography. They provided one photo. They did provide, you know, some B-roll footage that I put in my video.
And they had a lot of video folks at that event, too, and they didn't let anyone take any video. That's
nope.
Bizarre. Oh.
They had GoPros in the trucks, and they provided us with the GoPro footage and then some B-roll footage.
That's it.
So I just cut some of that together.
Okay, yeah. So they B-roll. Okay.
So we didn't,
because that would have been a waste, because they asked me to go, and I couldn't. And it would have been a waste of my time if I couldn't do video.
What are you printing behind you?
It is the
another
quarter.
Helmet?
It is, yeah. It was a quarter of a Daft Punk helmet. So in addition to the large helmets that we're making, I'm making little ones.
Okay. I had to know. I'm like, what is printing back there? Okay, fine. Okay.
Magic.
Back on track now.
All right. Okay. Last news item this week is some news last week from Argo AI, which is the company that is partly owned by Ford, partly owned by Volkswagen, and partly owned by the founders, Brian Selesky and Pete Rander, and now also partly owned by Lyft, now has a 2.5% stake in the company, because Argo is teaming up with Lyft, and they're going to launch Argo-powered Ford Escape robo-taxis later this year in Austin and Miami on the Lyft network. So it's going to be kind of like what if you go to Las Vegas now, or for the last couple of years, if you go to Las Vegas and you use the Lyft app, you have the option to get a ride from one of the self-driving vehicles from Motional, previously Aptiv. Now they're doing the same thing in Miami and Austin, to start with Argo, and this will be the first time the public gets to ride in Argo vehicles. They're, as I said, they're Ford Escapes. To start with, it's going to be a few dozen vehicles. They'll gradually expand it over time, and at first, they will also still have safety drivers in them. Eventually, at some point when they feel it's safe enough that they've proven the safety, they will add or they will take out the safety drivers. One of the interesting things about the partnership with Lyft is that Lyft has agreed to share a bunch of information, a bunch of their data with Argo, which they've shared information previously with Motional and with Waymo about where people are requesting rides, where they're using Lyft, you know, times of day, that sort of thing. But there's some additional data that Lyft has agreed to share with Argo, and that's why Argo is giving them some equity stake in the company. And that is safety data that they've got about crashes and near misses with their drivers, you know, information that they've collected through the driver app, the Lyft driver app, using the accelerometers and the phones, so they can estimate when the vehicles, you know, when the driver is, you know, done an emergency braking situation based on the amount of deceleration, and they're looking for things like near misses, and looking at where, what times of the day, you know, what routes, you know, are more likely to have safety problems. And so Argo is going to be able to use this information as a baseline for checking the safety of their own vehicles to see if their own vehicles are avoiding those kinds of situations. So this will be one of the first times when you have, because a lot of the problem is a lot of the safety data that's out there is not really very precise. It's not very granular, you know, as far as, you know, knowing a whole lot of information about when, you know, what the situation was, you know, where and when things happened. And so this is going to be one of the first times that Argo is going to have this other data to compare their own vehicles against, and that'll help them determine when their vehicles are actually safer than human drivers in the same scenarios. So, you know, later this year, if you happen to be in Austin and or Miami, you know, try out the Lyft app and see if you can get one of the Argo vehicles.
I was trying to think of a pun, but I'll stop.
I can see him. He's like, nope, he's got nothing.
I got nothing. I really thought I could pull it out, but no.
Well, that's kind of neat. I like the idea of them opening up. I like to see how these little baby steps are happening to getting all of this stuff being something that's in the hands of people in a way that's actually going to be something that they can use, you know, that you don't have to buy some expensive car to deal with it, that it's something you can, you know, calling for a lift. That's pretty cool.
Yeah. So let's do some listener questions. First one is from Speedmaster. It says, any other expected entrance to the mini truck scene? Maybe something smaller than a Tacoma, for example. Nicole, you were in Texas for Toyota's Toyota Palooza. Did you see any hints that they might maybe do something, you know, maybe using the Corolla Cross platform?
Honestly, the line, you know, we cannot comment on future product, blah, blah, blah. That was pretty firmly in place. There was nothing. We saw big things. We did not see little things. So, yeah, there was nothing that I saw in Toyota that would make me be able to say, like, maybe I think there's something smaller coming.
I think GM's going to keep an eye on Ford. And see how the Maverick does.
Maverick is going to do so well.
Yeah, I think everyone's going to keep
slick.
I think the Santa Cruz will probably do okay, but I think the Maverick's going to do really well, and I think everyone's going to keep an eye on them, and then we're going to bring back Mini Truckin' Magazine.
Mini Truckin' Magazine?
Mini Truckin', and it wasn't a G, it was I-N apostrophe. And you'd have all those slammed mini trucks, and so yeah, you get some... Truckin'. Mini truck
Ford Couriers.
Okay, I will eagerly await the return of Mini Truckin' Magazine.
Yep.
No, when I said the Maverick looked so good, and when the engineer went over everything with us the other day, there's a lot of thought that went into that thing. So I think it could do quite well. So I think your chance of Mini Truckin' Magazine having enough trucks to talk about coming back is pretty good.
Mini Truckin'.
Yeah, you know, I like what you say, Robbie, about GM. You know, they've got all these EVs coming, and you know, I mean, they still haven't shown us most of what's coming. I wouldn't be the least bit surprised. You know, I mean, they do have a compact Chevy crossover off this EV platform. They could easily turn that into a pickup truck too. You know, I mean, it would make a perfect platform for a pickup truck. So I wouldn't be surprised to see GM do one, especially, you know, the way they've talked, you know, so much about how they've compressed their development timeline with vehicles like the Hummer and the Cadillac Lyriq. You know, they could probably knock something out, you know, maybe by the end of 2023, if not sooner. I think we will see some interesting products, especially, you know, if, as you say, Nicole, the Maverick takes off. You know, I mean, if both that and the Santa Cruz both kind of flop in the marketplace and don't really get any buyers, then you know, I don't think anybody else is going to try it.
But I don't know how well the Santa Cruz is going to do because I haven't like spent as much time with that. But I spent a didn't drive it, but that the amount of thought that went into every last thing they did in that Maverick, like the way the bed is, it looks like there's just, you know. Every, you know, you can fit a 2x4 here to create an extra division. So you have three segments and you can put plywood here to fit, make it like a 2-level thing. And you can adjust the tailgate here so that it makes a door for that piece of plywood. Like there's a lot of thought that went into that. So that people who just need like that little, I kind of sort of want a truck, but I don't want a truck, but I need it to do a little bit more than the average car. It looks like they nailed it. So unless the thing drives terribly, I think I would be shocked if it wasn't a success, honestly.
Okay.
Maybe we'll get the Baja all back, right, too.
Next one.
Hey, you never know.
The Baja.
Ooh. Hey. Maybe Subaru can finally get some buyers for it.
The aftermarket for those things, it skyrocketed in the last few years because then suddenly it's like, oh, these are cool. But by then, they'd stop making them. No one bought them when they were new. Now they all want them used. Whoops.
Yeah. All right. Next one up from, I'm going to assume this is supposed to be Team Anger. Why won't automakers provide official technology upgrade process like Tesla does? Example, my 2014 Corvette radio is garbage, and I want to hand money to GM to replace it with a newer version, but they won't. There is the aftermarket. if GM doesn't want to take your money for that, You can put an aftermarket audio, system in there. The problem is up until now these systems have not been designed to be upgraded. Manufacturers did not design they didn't take into account that they would ever have to do that. Now new vehicles are being designed that way. They're being designed with the intention of being upgraded, getting software updates and performance upgrades over their lifespan. So going forward, you will see that. But yeah, I mean, if you want a new audio system in your 2014 Vet,
the 2014 doesn't seem like it was that long ago. But in the tech world, that was the dark ages. Like that's a long time
for OEMs, especially. Yeah.
That's too far ago for them to have thought like, hey, maybe we can upgrade this. Do an OTA upgrade or something. That was too long ago for that.
if you're a type of person that likes to do things yourself, I would recommend, and I've been recommending these folks since like the 90s, Crutchfield. I mean, I used to get the catalog. Mm-hmm. But like you just tell them the car you have, and you tell them the stereo you want, and they're like, okay, here's the harness, here's the bracket in case you need a new bracket. Here's everything you need to put this stereo in your car. And or you can just go to like
and they will tell you exactly which ones fit,
yeah,
which ones won't,
exactly, yeah,
you know, and they'll tell you all the speakers that'll fit in your car, and where there's cavities to put a speaker in, so if you want to add more speakers, they'll tell you all that stuff, and Crutchfield's great. I remember getting their catalogs all the time, and leafing through them. Now you can just do it online on their website. I'll have to add that to the show notes. Crutchfield, yeah.
Good old Crutchfield.
And actually, I mean, even Best Buy, stocks, surprisingly enough, a lot of that stuff, a lot of those adapter kits, because a lot of newer vehicles, they have openings that, are not necessarily, singled in or doubled in openings. That's the two sizes of, standard audio systems. But you can get adapters, get bezels that will fit. So you can put a standard one in there once you take out the whatever came from the factory. And you can find a lot of that stuff at your local Best Buy as well, or on Amazon as well. All right, next up, Tom McQuinn. I'm a fairly recent listener who discovered Sam on Leo Laporte's Tech Guy show. Hands-on guy who's gone through the pain of learning OBD2 and does his own maintenance, but I still find things in every episode that interest me, even when I'm just sitting there slack-jawed going, what the? You don't learn and grow by just taking advice from like-minded people. But the discussions of navigation systems frustrate me. I listen while driving, so I do miss things, but do these vendor navigation systems include traffic data? After a few years of no commuting, I am now driving 60 miles a day. A wreck on the highway can cost me an hour of time that I don't have to spare. Google Maps, however, will tell me there's a wreck and give me an alternate route. I use it even when I know exactly where I'm going. It's a deal breaker for me nav-wise. I have a friend who refuses to turn on location data for privacy reasons. We met down south for a trip, and he spent 4 hours getting through a bridge construction logjam that Google routed me around. It only cost me about 20 minutes of backroad driving through rural Kentucky. I'm nobody's poster boy for normalcy, but I really wonder if I'm the only one who values the traffic data that Google Maps provides. Do you guys use Google Maps or Waze or Apple Maps?
I use Google Maps. And even if I know where I'm going, just so I have an ETA of where I'm going to be. And sometimes if I know where I'm going and Google Maps is like, go this way, I'm like, no, Google. No. Yes. If you live in...
It's like, bad Google, that is not the best way to go on this. I know where I am. No, I agree with you. I use it even when I know where I'm going because it does... Especially if there's what I think might be the slimmest chance that I'm like doing, even if it's somebody say it's like an hour away and it's highway driving, if it's at rush hour and there's an accident, suddenly your hour drive is 2.5, unless someone tells you there's an accident and then you have 85 different back roads you can take. Although I don't know if I want to go on the back roads through rural Kentucky, but I would still, you know, I would still rather have an alternate route. So I tend to use it, but yeah.
Hey, those back roads in Kentucky are actually great to drive
they
on.
They can, as long, yes, but.
Don't necessarily want to run out of gas or get stuck there.
That's the kicker, right? So I don't want to get stuck in a back road in rural Kentucky. Now the Kentucky listeners are like, delete from my playlist. But we love you, Kentucky. But yeah, so I use it. And I think a lot, I mean, I see a lot of people that do that. I think Google Maps gets a lot of use from people who are just trying to keep an eye on things to make sure that even a regular route, but especially if I'm going on a road trip, like if I'm really driving, I use that all the time because I don't know where the heck I'm going. And if there's some logjam that's going to add hours to my drive when I'm already driving 6 hours, I don't want to get stuck in that.
There, you can use Google Maps, and I talked to the Polestar folks about this as well, where you don't have to sign in, you don't have to create an account. Because, you know, the Polestar uses Android Automotive, which is all this Google information that, of course, Google has access to this data. But if you're paranoid about privacy and about Google knowing where you are, et cetera, you can use the maps without signing in. So that's nice. You know, you're still being tracked. You're still being tracked because you own a phone. You're still being tracked. You know, it's rather difficult to not be tracked as a human in this day and age. But if you really want to at least minimize that, just don't create accounts. You know, it's not going to remember your last, addresses or your home or any of that stuff. But if you just type in the, you know, I need to go, you know, to this place, and you don't sign in your account, You're less likely to be say, oh, hey, this is Phil from New Haven and he's going here again. It's just data to them. So they'll know someone's doing this. They just won't know exactly who.
They don't know who it is. They don't know exactly who you are.
And even if you don't sign into anything, just carrying a phone, if nothing else, your cell carrier will know where you are because your phone has to connect to a cell tower in order to be useful.
Yeah, you're pinging towers.
Even if you turn off all the location data, the carriers will know where to find you approximately anyway.
I think I've long since given up the idea that there's any privacy unless I decide to live like a hermit, like Henry David Thoreau or one of those guys, Walden. Remember that book everybody had to read?
Walden Pond,
Walden Pond, living out there in the middle of nowhere. Then they won't know where I am. But even then, I'm probably on Google Maps somewhere and they got me anyway. So,
yeah. I think, you know, part of the question here from Tom was also about the built-in nav system. So even if you're not using, you know, Google Maps or Apple Maps or Waze from your phone, the built-in navigation systems in vehicles, at least, you know, most of them over the last 8 to 10 years, actually do have traffic data available. It usually, it generally comes through Sirius XM. And so I think you have to have a Sirius XM account to get that data. But, you know, if you have a Sirius XM subscription, then in most cases you will get traffic data. So even if you're using the embedded navigation, it will give, you know, and I've had this, you know, in many of the cars I've driven in, because I usually try to use the built-in nav, you know, just to see how bad it is compared to Google Maps. And I have had it, you know, say, hey, you know, there's a slowdown ahead. You know, do you want to be, you know, here's an alternate route if you want to take it. So it's not as slick as what you get with Google Maps or Waze, but it is there. So that traffic information is available, but it will cost you extra to get that data. It's there, but as I said. All right, next up, Rob Johnson. Wondering if you can point me and my sophomore college kid in the right direction. She's a cybersecurity student who's interested in focusing on automotive security. I spent my formative years as an intern at IBM, and it was an incredible experience for me. Do the big manufacturers do these kinds of things? It's probably not called internships now. I'm envisioning her working for free and in return getting some experience in a field where she's really interested in. Appreciate your comments and suggestions. So first of all, do not take unpaid internships. That's correct. Bullshit.
100%.
Everybody that gets interns should be paying their interns.
Yes.
If they refuse to pay your interns, go somewhere else. I don't care what experience you might be getting. Don't take an unpaid internship.
No.
Because that's wrong for companies to do that.
It is.
And they do call them internships. My daughter is not in cybersecurity, mm-hmm. but she's in software engineering. Focused on AI. She has an internship that pays her. And how she found it was she went to stuff. I mean, she's a year behind. Well, she'll be a sophomore, so I guess maybe about the same age as your kid. She actually did the recruiting stuff that her school does. Her school has a ton of things where they come on campus and they have hiring days and they're looking for internships. And she applied for a lot. It was as COVID started. So things were like, yeah, we've got a position. No, we don't, because we've canceled all our internships. But she had a lot of people reach out to her, and even the one she didn't get, I think it was still a great opportunity for her to sort of see what was out there, and you're sort of getting your interviewing skills going by just doing some of these internship things and these application processes. But I would tell your kid to look on campus and see what kind of recruiting they do, because my daughter's campus has literally, I think, 3 or 4 different recruiting days during the school year, and she got leads from every single one, and it ended up giving her one that's full-time in the summer and part-time during the school year right through graduation, and she just finished her freshman year. So I would start by looking and seeing what kind of opportunities there are right on the campus where she goes to school, mm-hmm. or he.
Post OnStar hack, every OEM has been built up their InfoSec teams. There's also, you know, there's a bunch of startups there looking for InfoSec startups that are, you know, pen testing a lot of these OEMs. So, you know, check with some of the startups. Not the last 2 years, but I've been going to DEF CON for a few years, and they have a car hacking village, like a whole village, like a whole section. It's all about car hacking. And, you know, there's a lot of different like things that are going on. So in addition to the internship, just sort of go and check out the community and talk to people in the community, because the internship at this OEM might not be as good as the internship at this OEM. You know, even post OnStar, I remember talking to different automakers about, because I used to be an InfoSec reporter, so I was doing both at the same time. I was doing InfoSec and cars, so I kept asking InfoSec questions around that time to automakers, and you could tell the ones that were really taking it seriously and the ones that were just sort of like lip service, just saying, oh yeah, we have. I'm like, oh, so are you using third parties to pen test your systems in order, you know? And they're like, we'll have to get back to you on that, versus like, oh yeah, we've been doing that for years. And, you know, it's, yeah, reach out to the community. But, you know, automakers are, you know, they're probably going to have internships for you. Again, there's the pen testing companies, the InfoSec companies, and then a lot of startups that are doing a lot of, you know.
Yeah. And yeah, most of the automakers now have, you know, internal cybersecurity teams. And, you know, over the last 5 or 6 years, you know, they about 5 years ago, or actually almost 6 years ago now, they set up what's known as an auto ISAC, an information sharing and an analysis center. And a lot of different industries have these. So there's one for the auto industry. All the major automakers and suppliers are part of this. They share security information about vulnerabilities. So they're all, you know, since the OnStar hack and the Jeep hack, they've all become hyper aware of this, and they're all taking it much more seriously now. In fact, the guys who did the legendary Jeep hack, Chris Valasek and Charlie Miller, they work for Cruise now. They're in charge of cybersecurity at Cruise, which is GM's autonomous vehicle group. And so, as you said, the automakers, but also the AV companies, companies like Argo, you know, they're looking for cybersecurity people, because especially for AVs, it's really critical that, you know, their systems be secure. You know, Cruise, Waymo, Aurora, Zoox, you know, they're all looking for people. Most of the startups in this area are actually based in Israel. You know, a lot of guys coming out of the Israeli intelligence service have gotten into this field, and quite a few of them have that have popped up over the last 5 or 6 years have actually been acquired by big suppliers like Bosch, Continental, and Magna. So look to those big tier one suppliers as well, because they have acquired some of these companies. So they're also involved in this stuff. Companies like Aptiv as well. So there's a whole bunch of companies out there. And as Nicole said, you know, work with, you know, your school recruiters, you know, they know where to find a lot of this stuff. But, go to the websites of these different companies, you know, especially the smaller ones, the startups, and, you know, they usually have a link right on the front page for careers. They're almost all hiring people. Chances are pretty good they're looking for people looking at cybersecurity. And, you know, you should definitely be able to get a paid internship in this field.
Yeah. And they've been talking for years about how there's not enough cybersecurity people in the world to take on all the jobs. So if he or she is really into it, then it's you're going to do all right.
Last one. Yeah. Yeah, no, it's definitely a field where you will be able to find work for the foreseeable future. Okay, Adam Jordison, family of five, all three kids are pre-teenage, so no more car seats, thankfully. We bought a 2012 Chrysler Town & Country in November of 2011, but it only has 60,000 miles on it right now. Here's my question. What is the outlook for three-row electric vehicles on dealer lots by the end of 2022? Would a PHEV be the best option if it's plug-in hybrid? I'm not going to go try and purchase a vehicle this year because of the current state of inventory at dealerships and potential for markups. However, I was curious that what the marketplace might look like in 18 months. Definitely, there will be three-row vehicles on the market next year, electric and plug-in hybrid. And actually, you know, if you were in the market right now, although you might have a hard time getting one, the Chrysler Pacifica plug-in hybrid, three-row, you know, perfect replacement for your Town & Country. You know, and it's got 32-33 miles of electric driving range. And then, you know, when you want to do a road trip, you just keep right on going. There will be a variety of SUVs, crossovers in that range. Ford has said they're going to have an electric Explorer coming, although they haven't given a timeline for that. But I would expect that to, you know, probably by 2023. GM has a bunch of stuff coming. There is the Volkswagen ID. Buzz, the production version of which will be arriving in the U.S. market in 2023. It's launching in Europe next year, and then 2023, the year after that, or in the U.S. There's the Rivian R1T or R1S, you know, which is three row. That's
pricey,
little, you know, maybe a little on the small side for you, and it's going to be pricey. But there will be a lot of choices by the end of next year. You'll have a bunch of things to choose from.
I say you be the cool parent and you get the Buzz. The ID. Buzz.
Yeah.
I think it's going to be tough to get one, though, when those things come out. I think those things are people have been champing at the bit for those things ever since they showed it off. I don't even remember what show, but since then, everyone's like, when's that coming? I have people who DM me. Like, just, hey, when's the ID. Buzz coming? And I say, 2023, 2022 in Germany. And they're like, okay, I think I can wait. And I'm like, okay.
Yeah, and you know, if you like, I said, if you don't want another minivan, there will be SUV crossover type vehicles as well in that segment. So, and there will be two rows and three row vehicles. So, you'll have there will be something for you to choose from. Oh, there's also, let's see, I'm trying to remember, the Fisker Ocean. That's
Fisker
a Subaru,
Ocean,
isn't it?
That's, no, it says, I believe it says, I was just Googling that, and it says, Google says they're one of the benefits will be to offer a third row seating option. So,
okay, there you go, the Fisker Ocean. You can you can support our old friend Rebecca.
Rebecca.
Yeah. So, yeah, there will definitely be stuff out there for you in both electric and plug-in hybrid. So, with that, I think we're done for this week.
That's it. Yeah. That's all she wrote.
I still got a few more days with the Escalade. Right.
The Escalade. Watch that video. You got to Google that. It's hilarious.
Escalade SNL.
Escalade.
All right. See you all next time.
Bye.
When everyone is on the same page, getting things done is easy. Make a bigger impact at work with Grammarly. Grammarly is your secure AI writing partner that enables your team to make their point and move faster. You can even save time by going from spending hours editing drafts to just seconds. Join the 96% of Grammarly users that say it helps them craft more impactful writing. Sign up and download Grammarly for free at grammarly.com/podcast. That's grammarly.com/podcast. Easier said, done.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.